Hello, welcome to the Bearded Tits podcast, hosted by me, Jack Perks. Professionally, I'm a wildlife cameraman, but I dabble in podcasting, and each Tuesday, we release an episode as I have a chat with scientists, artists, filmmakers, and passionate people all about nature in a light-hearted and certainly not serious way. Hello and welcome to the Bearded Tits podcast. I'm your host, Jack Perks. Now today I've got Chantelle Lyons, I think that's how you pronounce her name, and we're going to be talking about wild boar. She's recently written a book with Bloomsbury called Groundbreakers, The Return of Britain's Wild Boar. I'm very excited to be chatting to Chantelle because wild boar are a subject that I know frighteningly little about. I've been looking for them once or twice over the years, but I've never actually seen one. So I'm really, really excited to find out a little bit more about these incredible and perhaps misunderstood creatures. Now, this is the bit where I hold my hands out and beg for money. It's buymeacoffee.com. There's a link in the description. If you don't know what buymeacoffee.com is, it's basically where you can fund creators. This podcast is independent. I don't have any sponsors. No one pays me to do it. The only way that I make money is through you, the listener. So if you're feeling incredibly generous and kind, you can support this podcast for the price of a coffee. I actually prefer tea. Or a beer, whatever you like, about a fiver, something like that. And it helps me tick along. If you can't afford to do that, no problem at all. Someone else is paying for you, and it means that you can listen for free. There are other things you can do for free. Leaving a review really helps us out. You can share them on social media, and you can do all that kind of shit. I don't know, whatever other people do on these podcasts. I'm not entirely sure. So buymeacoffee.com, the link is in the description. Now, something very exciting has happened. The podcast has reached 100,000 downloads, which is fucking crazy. That it's mental to think that this podcast has reached that milestone. So I'm incredibly chuffed and grateful for everyone who tunes in and listens to me, my nasally East Midlands voice as I waffle for an hour or so. It's been phenomenal. So thank you so much for tuning in and listening. I'm always intrigued how people find this podcast. So if you can, what I'd be very grateful for is if you want to just chuck me a message on Instagram, it's at FishTwitcher, or however you kind of follow me, where you found this podcast. Was it through my social media? Did you find it on a subscription service or something? I'm always curious how people find it. But yeah, it's absolutely brilliant. We're 18 episodes into a 20-episode season. So we've only got two more episodes left of the third season. Then we'll be going on hiatus for a while and probably coming back. We talk about that more in the last episode. But look, it's been brilliant. Let's get on to today's episode. So we've got Chantelle on the podcast talking about wild boar. We're going to be asking her what's the reaction from locals who live in the Forest of Dean, some of the other populations. It's not just the Forest of Dean, they are spread around the UK. And are they dangerous? These are big animals. Do they cause any real threat to humans? Here's our chat. So welcome to the podcast, Chantelle.
Thank you very much for having me on, Jack.
How are you doing? You all good?
Yep, very good. Done a full day of work, but it's Monday, so I'm still feeling fresh. Got lots of fuel in the tank.
Oh, wow. Well, yeah, well, someone's got it. It's got to be done. We were just saying before we started, every time I go on Twitter, all I see is this wild boar book popping up all over the place, which you must be very, very pleased with. So let's start at the beginning. Like, what led you to write a book about wild boar?
Yeah, it's a bit of a twisty path, really. I didn't really know anything about wild boar. They didn't really register on my radar until I read George Monbiot's book about rewilding called Feral, yeah, in 2013. And I guess that then primed me for when I saw headlines coming out of the Forest of Dean in 2014 about wild boar chasing people, attacking people's dogs, digging up pastures and playgrounds and things like that. And it was in early 2014 that I was looking for a topic for my dissertation for a master's I was doing at the time. I'm in environmental social science, but I thought, no one's gone to the Forest of Dean to talk to people there about what it's like to live with wild boar. And it's an unusual situation they find themselves in because wild boar had at that time returned to just a few pockets of the country. So they were, the people there were going for a really unusual experience compared to most of the people in the UK. So I thought it'd be really fascinating, and I'd certainly be able to get 15,000 words for a dissertation out of the interviews I did. So I went there into the summer of 2014 to speak to all these people about what it was like to live with wild boar. And what I found there completely blew me away, blew my mind, and left me thinking, oh my God, why isn't everyone talking about this? Why isn't everyone looking at what's happening in the Forest of Dean? It's incredible. The wild boar are not just rewilding themselves, they're rewilding people by changing how they feel about the woods, and how they live their daily lives, and when they go out into the woods. And yeah, I just thought, oh, someone's going to write a book about this soon. And no one did. And about 7 years later, I eventually found the courage to send a proposal to Bloomsbury. And they said, yeah, write it. And
Fantastic.
after pretty soon after that, yeah, I moved to the Forest of Dean so I could properly immerse myself in the world of the boar and do all the research and actually write the book.
So I suppose it's almost like an interesting case study for other rewilding projects. You know, when people talk about things like lynx and other species, this is one that's, although it's not an official rewilding, it is kind of similar parameters, isn't it, for a species that wasn't there, that's now there, and people are having to learn to live with it. So I suppose people can learn a lot from the interactions.
Yeah, definitely. And one of the things I say in the book is this is one way it can play out. And obviously, every place is going to be different. The context is going to be different. The Forest of Dean is a very interesting place. It's got that contiguous forest, which, well, sort of contiguous forest, which the wild boar need. And that's why the wild boar have done so well there compared to other places in England. But also, there's interesting people there. There's an interesting way of life, particularly given forestry England manages so much of it. So there's always sort of kind of human on human conflict, really, or sort of sort of arguments sort of between locals about sort of how the forest should be managed, and the wild boar have just sort of been an extra grenade into that mix. But yeah, it's certainly it's I think it's really the wild boar and the Forest of Dean, and indeed other places in the UK where they've returned to, should absolutely be studied. When we are looking at what are the potential impacts and what are the pitfalls, when we are looking to reintroduce animals.
What has the reaction like been of late? I mean, you've sort of touched on it a bit there already, but what has the reaction? I mean, I'm guessing it's probably quite bipolar in a way. It's like some people must absolutely love them and other people not so much.
Yeah, bipolar is a really good way to describe it. My other way of sort of key way of describing it really is Marmite. They are the Marmite boar. You love them or you hate them. And certainly when I first went there in 2014, and when I've gone back and even spoken to people who I spoke to 7, 8, even 10 years ago, there's such a variety and such a dichotomy of views around the boar. Some people do love them. They say they feel an absolute thrill to come across boar. Even if they find them a little bit scary, they still embrace the feelings that the wild boar conjure in them, and they go out looking for them, or they do things in their life to adapt to the boar, such as keeping their dog on a lead or attaching bells to their dog's collar so that they can let the boar know that they're around. But then there are people who hate them in terms of the damage that they perceive the boar are causing to the forest, or that they are genuinely terrified of what the wild boar might do to them themselves. I mean, there are people who do worry that the boar will eat them. That is a fear that I have heard some people say, and you do often hear people say, oh, it's only a matter of time before a child is killed. But they've been saying that since 2014, so we're still waiting for that to happen, and hopefully it won't, but I don't think it
No, hopefully not. When did we get the Forest of Dean population? Because I know that's like
will.
one of the main boar populations in the UK, but I don't actually know that much about it. So when did they first pop out of the ground and come into the Forest of Dean?
I like that. As if they almost like dwarves in Lord of the Rings, they sort of pop out fully formed. So the Forest of Dean boar began in 1999 when there was a release of quite a small number of individuals, probably about 15, and that the belief is that that was a bankrupt farmer. And then the story might have ended there, but in 2004, a much bigger group of boar turned up just a bit to the west of the forest. And again, people say that was a bankrupt farmer, but I spoke to an ex-ranger while I was doing the research, and his understanding and what he was he found he had been told was that it was a shooting syndicate who put their money together and bought a load of boar from various farms and put them on a truck and released them.
Really? Wow.
Yeah,
So
and they wanted a population to shoot at, and that's what they got.
Because I suppose if they hadn't have done that, they would be quite inbred, I guess, if there's only like
Yeah,
so.
I think if that second release hadn't happened, there's even a population, I think, in Belgium, which started with just Fribourg. So,
Oh,
like many
wow.
other, I mean, you know, there are lots of species surprise us with how well they can do, even when they've got a really tiny founding population. But certainly, I think the chances of the boar thriving without that second release probably would have been quite low.
That's amazing. So is it a case then that the Forest of Dean is like the perfect habitat for boar, or is it just a case that that's where boar were chucked and they do well there? Because I know if you look on the continent, like places like Berlin and stuff, they're coming into cities, so presumably they're not too fussy. But is yeah, what's so special about the Forest of Dean then?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I mean, wild boar is so adaptable, and all across the world, including in Europe, they have all kinds of ways of living and making their living. And some of them do choose more urban life, some of them stick to the fringe, or some of them do stick to the deeper forests. In the Forest of Dean, I think it's pretty much as good as they're going to get in England,
Right,
because
okay.
we don't have that many big patches of woodland. It is very good habitat for them, in the sense that even though there are still so many people shooting and legally shooting them and illegally poaching them, they have managed to survive and even thrive. Certainly when you compare that to the outlook for the other populations we have in England, which seem to be very, very low indeed. In Devon and Dorset, they seem to have been almost completely wiped out. I have heard rumours recently of some surviving in Dorset, but I do say in the book they're pretty much gone. I would love to be proven wrong. In Kent and East Sussex as well, there used to be a decent population, but they again, I mean, there hasn't been any sign of breeding. There hasn't been an actual really a sighting for about 2 years or so, that I know
Really?
of. So everywhere else they're not doing well in
So
England.
my because my wife is from near Dungeness, so kind of on that part of Scotland, and her mum who lives down there, she remembers only like 10 years ago, like semi-regularly driving at night, she'd see little humbugs and the odd sow crossing the road. So,
Amazing.
but she hasn't seen them for a long time now. So yeah, it's interesting that she used to kind of see them around that neck of the woods, because I think that was a strong population, wasn't it? The
It
Sussex.
was, and it was the first one that we know of.
Yeah.
In 1987, there was a wild boar farm in Kent, in Tenterden in Kent, and the great storm happened. It brought a fence down, and that's when the first wild boar stepped out into freedom, as far as we know.
Ah,
So
wow.
it is, yeah, it's sad that that was the first population, and now it seems to be pretty much gone.
And that's what, because of poaching, you believe?
Yeah, poaching
Yeah.
and legal, well, I say legal shooting because there's, I mean, for example, there's no close season. There's very few regulations and restrictions around shooting boar. If they wander onto your land and you have a license for the right caliber of rifle, you can shoot them, or you can give permission to someone else to shoot them. And of course, there
Right.
is a lot of illegal poaching that happens as well.
That makes sense. And you mentioned England there, but are they crossed into Wales or Scotland yet?
Yeah, Wales, not so much. There does not seem to be a single decent population, or they don't seem to have gained a foothold there yet. You do hear about them turning up in places like Monmouth, places right over the border near to
Yeah.
the Forest of Dean. But those usually seem to be the odd dispersing male, because wild boar, the male's the ones who are more likely to roam further. But there are so many people gunning, sort of shoot a looking to shoot them. If they step outside of the Forest of Dean, they stand a good chance of being shot. So it's been very hard for them to disperse beyond the Forest of Dean to the Wales side.
Yeah.
In Scotland, the picture is much rosier. They do seem to be several thousand boar. They don't know for sure. I mean, no one has much idea at
Several
all.
thousand, do you
Yeah,
say?
several thousand, but scattered
Wow.
across quite an area, of course, quite a
Yeah.
big area. But
Yeah, of
yeah,
course.
no, certainly they. And there's the odd bit of sort of culling that happens by the Forestry Commission up in Scotland, and lots of sort of private shooting going on up there. But yeah, they on the it does seem that they are they're slowly but steadily increasing their numbers in Scotland.
Because you would think that Scotland would be perfect for them, I guess, wouldn't it? Like a lot more room to kind of expand and woodland and
Yeah,
whatnot.
exactly. I mean, there's a lot of the tree cover up there is coniferous. It's plantations, which is not nearly as good habitat for them as the deciduous woodland. But it will do, at least it will do for sheltering them, so it is a lot easier for them to hide, at least from all the
And
guns.
same story, like they would have been escapees or releasers, presumably.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And there's lots of contention and debate about how pure they are. Obviously, you can't see me using the double quote marks on the recording, but I mean, the idea, well, when it comes to wild boar, some scientists argue there's no such thing as a pure wild boar anymore because for thousands of years we've been bringing domestic pigs into places like Europe and they've been canoodling with wild boar and hybridizing to varying degrees. So there's a lot of debate about what is a wild boar. And how many pig genes do you need to have in your wild boar before you can say it doesn't belong in the wild?
Are they? I mean, this is completely me being naive now. Is a pig not a domestic wild boar? Are they actually
It
separate
is
species?
exactly.
It is. It
It
is.
is.
Okay, so they
Yeah.
are
But
the
of
same
course, there's
species.
been, yeah, it's like the wolves and the dogs.
Got you. Okay.
You know, obviously, they are the same species, but there are a lot of sort of traits that are quite have diverged quite a bit in terms of reproduction. So
Right.
obviously domestic pigs can have much bigger litters. So that can result in if there is interbreeding, then you can get wild boar having bigger litters, which obviously then leads to question marks over sort of their management. And obviously there are some genuine concerns when you have wild boar in the wild, you have a lot of domestic pig genes. But certainly I think the ones, well, in the UK, on the whole, I think the wild boar we have very much deserve to be in the wild.
Yeah, no, fair enough. People, I mean, you've touched on it earlier as well, that like people do get a little bit worried about them. So are they dangerous? Do they warrant this sort of a kind of reputation that they have?
Yeah, I don't think they do. And it's very much the cliche or sort of the thing that the people who don't really know about wild boar fall back on. It's like, oh, don't they attack people? Don't they charge you? You know, as soon as you lock eyes with them or you see a sow with piglets, she's going to go for you. And I think a lot of that comes from the fact that, I mean, when most of the time when there have been injuries, it's because of hunters cornering them, you know, the wounded, injured wild boar. And that's understandable. That's what most animals would do. My experience has been the total opposite. Whenever I've gone looking for them in the forest or I've stumbled on them while not looking for them, because it often seems that you do find them when you're not looking for them, they run away. They want to be as far away from you as possible. And it's quite hard even just to get them to stay there. They're very good at sniffing me out. I don't know if I have a particularly pungent scent compared to most other humans, but yeah, and certainly I don't want to discount anyone's experience. A lot of people say that they have been charged or chased or they've been followed in the boar. I think there are definitely situations where, for example, you have mother sows who have kind of followed people and sort of been very much in the mindset of, go on, off you go. This is our wood. But I think a lot of the cases of people saying they've been charged are misunderstandings, misinterpretations of the situation. I mean, wild boar are very fast. So if they were actually trying to catch someone, I think it would have happened by now, but it hasn't.
How big are they? Because I mean, I suppose most people listening to this probably haven't seen a wild boar. Are they quite big animals?
Oh yeah, they're hefty. And when they're in a sort of charged situation, when they're in a situation where they're nervous or angry, they will have this amazing sort of bristly crest along their backs and they raise that and makes them look bigger. It makes them look quite hyena-ish in a way.
Okay, yeah.
Centimeter-wise, I'm really, but I always actually genuinely forget because I'm really bad at measurements and things like that and just holding it in my head. But you
People
know,
have to
they're
buy
kind
the
of built like,
book.
yeah, they're built like little grizzly bears almost. You know, they are hefty. The males are bigger. I think the males can range between, in terms of weight, the males can range between 100 and 150 kilograms. So at the shoulder, you know, they're big, but not as tall as a deer. But
No,
you
but
know.
they're just bulky.
Yeah, very bulky.
And I'm guessing, I mean, I'm assuming there's obviously not been any fatalities in the UK. Has there been any attacks? Have they ever attacked anyone?
Yeah, so there's been basically two sort of recorded cases of injury. And the first one was this guy walking in the Forest of Dean with his dog in 2018, I think, and this boar just burst out of the undergrowth, bit him on the hand, ran away, and he sort of pulled his hand out of his glove and the tip of his finger stayed in the glove. Like when I say the tip, like literally just like the very pad of the fingertip. And he got it sewed back on. It was quite, you know, I mean the photo actually, because some of the local news sites did provide a photo and it was quite impressively gory.
Yeah, I
But
bet.
I mean the guy himself was quite he was quite well he was quite casual about the whole thing. He said, you know, as far as I'm concerned, this is very unusual behavior for a boar, and he seemed quite chill about the whole thing. But it was funny because a lot of people did remember that story as, oh, didn't that guy have his arm ripped off? It's like, no,
Yeah,
it's literally just like the part of his fingertip. Yeah. And then
yes,
the other case
yeah.
was Yeah, just 2 years ago in Scotland, there was a group of boar released, and it was a mother with some juvenile boar, sort of teenage babies, basically. And I think she was walking her dog, and she had the dog on a leash, and then the boar sort of went for the dog, and she sort of tried to protect the dog and got hit on the thigh, got clipped on the thigh by the boar. So you can understand how that situation happened. Obviously, not fun for the boar or the woman. But yeah, those are literally the only two cases that we've had, and the boar have been back in the country for over 30 years now.
Yeah, so I mean, you compare it to say how many dog attacks happen in the UK every year or something like that, then it's not a common thing. And both of those instances you mentioned, they were walking a dog, so it wasn't like the boar was doing it unprovoked. It's seen what it thinks is a threat, and it's gone to try and
I mean,
protect
yeah,
itself.
to be fair, in those cases, to the people, they weren't doing anything,
No,
sort of
no.
their dogs weren't harassing, well, as far as we know, their dogs weren't harassing the boar. And there have been cases of dogs harassing boar or even attacking piglets.
Yeah.
But sometimes the boar do give as good as they get, and they will sort of injure dogs, but that's the way they see them, as werewolves.
Yeah. Well, they're gonna think it's a threat, isn't it? Because well, the two things I remember about Boar last year, wasn't there something? Was it Shakira or some pop star?
I do mention that in the book, actually.
Do you mention that? So,
She
right, do you want to say what that
got sort
is?
of mugged. I'm trying to remember when exactly it was. I feel like it was 2020 even, but
Okay, a few years ago, yeah.
it was just a park on the outskirts of Barcelona, and right next to this sort of big forest they have. And she had two boar essentially mug her and grab her bag, because they have learned. I do in the book actually go to Barcelona, and I went to the park where it happened. I
You
didn't see
interviewed
the
the
boar
boar
there.
that did
Yeah, I wanted, well, in a sense, I
it.
tried, but no, the boar out there are very smart, and they're very urban boar. They're very,
Really?
they're very smart, and they have worked out things such as, oh, if you run up behind people and bite their bum, then they all drop their shopping bags, and then you can have the food that's in the shopping bags.
Wow.
Yeah, a vet took me around sort of the edges of the city, and he told me all these crazy things the boar there are up to.
And you saw urban boar there? You actually saw them around?
I did. I did by the vet. He took me to some places, and we did see some
Wow.
boar who were sort of just casually wandering around the streets, snaffling up the litter. Didn't care about us at all.
That's
But I
incredible.
did also then. Yeah, I hiked in the forest outside of Barcelona, sort of another day, and then I saw some boar there, which were much more sort of, as soon as they saw me, they ran. So you could see, like, there are boar, living there, that have all chosen totally different ways of living. Some shun contact, and some with us, and some don't.
Bit like red foxes here, I guess, isn't it? If you go to London, you've got
Exactly.
one brushing you against the leg, and then you just go a bit out to the countryside, and you can't get anywhere near them, can you?
That's exactly right.
Did you see the story? This might be a little bit more niche, but there was a guy, I think it was Berlin. It was a nudist. You know what I'm going to say? Okay,
I have
there
the
was,
naked man chasing the boar. He stole his
yes,
laptop. That's also
that's
mentioned in the book.
okay.
How could
Which
I
is
not?
incredible. Like, someone just sent me a picture, and I thought, what the heck? Without any context, like, what is going on here? But yeah,
I know,
just
it's amazing. I had to mention that in the book. Yeah, I
was
love
that a
that
similar
story.
thing? Was it like the boar were trying to thought there was food in there or something? Or
Yes, definitely.
yeah,
Yeah,
okay.
she thought there was food in there, but there was just a laptop, which, no, not very edible, even for a boar, even though
Yeah.
boar, are omnivorous, and they will eat anything they can get their, get their mouths on. Yeah, laptop probably beyond them.
That's amazing. So I mean, people are talking about the reintroduction. Do you think we should go one step further then? Do you think we should maybe reintroduce boar to parts of the country where they currently aren't?
Yeah, absolutely. It's interesting, because one of the complaints you hear from people in places like the Forest of Dean is, we weren't consulted. It's not fair that we have to live alongside these animals, which you would negate to an extent if everyone had to deal with it. That's perhaps not an argument that on its own is going to sway a lot of people, but basically, wild boar are an irreplaceable member of British wildlife. They do things in the ecosystem that no other animal can. These are functions that are missing from our ecosystems, have been since the wild boar hunted to extinction 700 or so years ago. So if we are serious about wanting wide-scale ecosystem restoration in this country, which we say we do, then we have to have the wild boar back. It's non-negotiable, basically.
Because they one of my favorite things they do is they make ponds, don't they, to a degree?
Yes, they do. Yes.
Is it they wallow on something? Or yeah. Well, you tell me. You'll know more than me.
Yeah, oh no, happy to. No, I love talking about wallows because yeah, I mean, well, love to wallow. They don't have sweat glands, they have to do it. They do it all year round, but especially summer. But yeah, they create these wallows, these sort of the muddy, watery scoops. They may not look like much, but they can be really important habitat for a variety of aquatic organisms, including some small species of freshwater fish. Obviously, if they can get, sort of be dispersed or transported into those pools somehow. Also sort of amphibians such as natterjack toads. There was a wallow near where I lived while I was writing the book, and I had a trail camera in front of it, and I would sometimes capture a frog or a toad hopping out of this wallow.
Oh,
You'd see
brilliant.
these two tiny this pair of tiny eyes sort of hopping along in the dark. It was amazing. So it just went to show that these wallows that the boar kind of they create, and then they keep them alive. They're sort of constantly maintaining them by their wallowing. And they're really important sort of features of the landscape, which obviously most parts of the country don't exist anymore.
No, of course not. I'm kind of flipping the coin onto the other side of it. Do you ever think that there'd be a situation where they'd be completely removed? Like, because I know there is contention about that. Do you think that the scales could turn the other way if it got to a certain point?
Yes, well, when you say certain point, I don't know if you're thinking of if their numbers sort of
I'm
became
thinking
too
more, I guess I'm thinking more kind of man, like if people got fed up and complained
much.
to, if the right person spoke to the right person, would like a bit like the badger call, not that they were trying to completely eradicate badgers, but do you think it would ever get like, right, we need to get rid of all the boar in the UK, or do you think that's probably, I don't know, but
Well,
overreaching?
yeah, actually, I mean, it's an important question to ask, because it is a possibility, if African swine fever reaches the
Yes,
UK,
yeah, you talk about that in the book,
which
don't you?
I do, yes. So a bit like bird flu, it's a disease that has started because of our lust for meat, the factory farming that we do. So it's this awful disease that's racing through these farmed pig populations, and obviously it's gotten into many wild boar populations as well. And the wild boar themselves then become vectors for the disease. And in many countries, they've been culled really hard, in an attempt to protect the pig and the meat industry, which is devastating for the wild boar and for their ecosystems, sort of protecting our right to cheap meat. And sacrificing wildlife essentially. But I mean, IDEFA has said, they'll never consider official reintroduction of wild boar while ASF is a risk. And then Forestry England has said they are ready to try and exterminate the wild boar in the Forest of Dean if they ever detect ASF in a wild boar in the Forest of Dean because of the risk that they might transmit ASF to pigs somewhere. I think it's far more likely that a human will transmit it to a pig on a farm somewhere in the UK before it ever gets into the wild boar. But that's the situation we find ourselves in, sadly. It's quite precarious, really.
Is that not, I'm assuming that's not present in the UK at the moment, this disease?
No, it
No.
isn't.
Okay.
Not yet. There's lots of fears that it will soon be announce itself, because we've got really, essentially, really crap border controls now since Brexit. The government has declined to sort of introduce the stringent regulations we need to make sure that no meat is being imported that could have ASF in it. It's not harmful to humans, but the meat can carry the virus. The virus can survive a long time. So if, for example, someone eats some pork that's come from a country where they have ASF and the virus is present in the pork they're eating, if they drop a piece or they just chuck it away, and if they're working on a farm or something, if a pig eats that, then it's game over.
Yeah, I see. Yeah, it's quite scary when you think about it,
Really scary.
like when it goes. I was reading one of the reviews, and it mentioned in your book a phrase that I wasn't sure about, and it was called national zoo phobia. So can you explain to me what national zoo phobia is?
So zoophobia is a term. I didn't invent that term.
Okay, all right.
But
Okay, I
yeah,
wasn't sure.
zoophobia, well, obviously phobia, it's a fear of something, and zoo is animals. So zoophobia is a fear of animals. And in the UK, we do have a national zoophobia because, unlike, I guess, the majority of the rest of the human race, we are living with a very narrow subset of animals, and we don't know what it's like to live with anything scarier than a fox, essentially. Because we stripped out all of the big and potentially dangerous wildlife. You know, we have no lynx, no bears, no wolves. Obviously, places like the US, they have, you know, lions. You know, Africa, elephants, leopards, etc. See, Asia as well. And so we are very unusual that we don't need to ever worry about what wildlife might do to us, which is quite anomalous compared to a lot of the world. And I think that it might sound some quite like a nice, cozy, safe existence, but it also means that we just don't have any, we have no familiarity with these animals, and we don't have the mental armor, we don't have the mindset that allows us to sort of accept living alongside these animals. And I think that really manifests in things. I do mention a few cases, sort of headlines in the book. You know, there was a headline once where a man phoned 999 because he saw a hedgehog outside and he was scared of the hedgehog. There's another headline I mentioned where there was a badger hanging around near a school and the farmer was warning the parents to be careful, you know? I think there really is a national fear around wildlife in this country, sadly.
I went to Alaska a couple of years ago for a job filming salmon, Pacific salmon, and obviously they got bears out there. And I was like having kind of quite, I feel like a bear is warranted to be worried about, to be fair, but I was quite anxious, like, oh my God, we're going to see these bears. And we went out there and we got relatively close to them. They were not interested in us remotely. They were quite happy catching salmon. But I was talking to the guides and I was like, you know, do you not worry every time you open your front door? And they were like, no, they know, they do their thing, we do our thing. They take precautions, they have bear spray on them and stuff, and they just carry on as normal. And I was like, Jesus, I cannot imagine living with a top predator like that. Mm-hmm. And I think because to an extreme, like you're saying in the UK, we just have become declimatized to it. We haven't had to live with anything like that for several hundred years. It's not even in our vocabulary to think to live with animals like that.
Exactly. And I think there's a really powerful metaphor in thinking about immune systems. So, you know, when you have, say, a group of people who have had no exposure to a particular virus, then an incomer arrives, spreads the virus, their immune systems are unprepared. Immune systems obviously fail or go into overdrive. And I think that, you know, is kind of what happens really mentally with animals. Like when something like a wild boar comes back, you know, we're like, oh my God, we don't know what this thing is. You know, we've never lived with it. But, you know, we can adapt. It's like, you know, the casualness with which those people you mentioned treated the bears. I mean, that made me think of this lady in the Forestine who I first spoke to 8 years ago, well, 10 years ago now, 2014. And she said, you know, she was worried that if she fell in the forest one day, broke her leg, and if the wild boar saw her, they might come and eat her and she wouldn't be able to get away. So she was that scared of the boar. But then when I caught up with her sort of, you know, some eight years or so later, she said, I'm not scared of them anymore because every time I see them, I shout and they run away. And so I know they're not going to hurt me. So she's adapted. You know, she has grown more familiar and she has her coping mechanisms, her adaptation strategies.
So if we want to get philosophical, rewilding is a bit like a vaccination.
Yeah, yeah.
for the UK, think of it like that. Before we go, like how easy are boar to find? Are they, you know, because I've only ever looked for them once years ago. You might even know, it was a guy called Robin Ward. He was quite into his wild boar.
Yes, I have spoken to him actually. Okay. Yeah,
he's a lovely bloke, and he very kindly took me out a number of years ago. We didn't see any, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But it's on my to do list. Non-fishy to-do list. I do want to get them, but we didn't see any. But for the average person wanting to see wild boar, presumably the Forest of Dean is the best place. Yeah, so what are the chances of stumbling upon one?
So the chance of stumbling on them in the day is really, really tiny. To maximise your chances, you've got to go at dawn or dusk.
Right.
Partly because, well, the boar are much more active then, and because they know there aren't so many people around then, and you don't get dog walkers. I mean, my rule is if I'm out there in the crack of dawn, as soon as I've seen the first dog walker, it's all over. I can just go home.
And
obviously, you sort of keep an eye out. You start to get a feel for sort of the places you might see them. And there are certain spots where when I've gone there and just sat out, you know, sort of essentially hidden myself in a bush at dusk, you know, I can be guaranteed that I will at least hear them. Going about their their business, even if I don't actually see them. But yeah, Dawn and Dusk, sort of the, yeah, the kind of, oh, it's really hard to, I mean, there are lots of, you know, you can find them all over the forest, really. So they've really got a huge amount of luck in it. But then there are some wildlife photographers who just, for some reason, just get good photos in the daylight every time.
Yeah.
I think they're, you know, I'm very envious of their ball craft.
Very, very dedicated, I guess, putting the time in and getting them. Well, it's been fascinating talking about book, because that is a subject I don't know a great deal about. If people want to get a copy of the book, is there any way you would prefer to direct them to get it?
Yeah, very kind of you to ask. Probably the Bloomsbury website is the very best to go via.
Cool. I'll chuck a link in there if anyone is inspired and wants to find out more about ball. But yeah, look, thanks for joining us, Chantelle.
Yeah, thanks so much for having on. It's been great questions. So it's been a fun conversation.
Good. I just make it all up, so that's great. So that's all. That was Chantelle Lyons. I've got to go see some wild boar. That was just amazing hearing about them. The idea of being stood in a woodland and seeing this big thing staring at you. I suppose some people might be a little bit worried, but for me that sounds quite exciting. So yeah, somewhere down the line, I'll get my camera gear, go to the Forest of Dean maybe, and go see if I can find one. So at the back end of these podcasts, I've been plugging certain videos from the YouTube channel. But today I'm just going to do more of a general one, which is basically if you can subscribe to my YouTube channel. I've mentioned it a few times. I am trying to do more YouTube work. I really like the sort of freeing style of it, that I can pretty much just do whatever the hell I want. It doesn't always work, but I can do lots of different content. So if you're not subscribed to my YouTube channel, but you have a YouTube account, I would say, as a favour to me, if you can subscribe, it takes you 2 minutes, and it really helps me bump up my statistics and get my videos out there. The YouTube channel is called Chasing Scales, and if you subscribe to that, that would be absolutely fantastic. And that's another thing you can do for free. If you can't support my podcast with money, you can at least, if you have a YouTube account, subscribe to that, and that helps me out because I do get paid with ad revenue via YouTube. And there's lots of exciting content on there as well that you might very well like. Now, next week, I have got Ben Rawson on from the National Museum of Wales, and he is an expert in mollusks. And in particular, we're going to be talking about slugs. I have had my own trials and tribulations with slugs in my garden, so I'm very much looking forward to chewing Ben's ear off about slugs and how maybe not get rid of them, but maybe I can live with them and sort it out, because they have been a pain to say the least. But Ben is going to champion them next week. It's going to be really interesting. This has been the Bearded Tits podcast. I've been your host, Jack Perks, and I'll see you next Tuesday. Cheers.